Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. Xander Schauffele is the winner of the 152nd Open Championship, a final round 65 to win at Royal Troon by two shots over Billy Horschel. Rex, that was quite a final round performance. When asked to describe what happened on Sunday and where it ranks among the best rounds that Xander Schauffele has played in his career, he said, quote, "At the tippy top, that was the best round of golf I have played." Do you concur? Why or why not?
Well, statistically, I think it has to be. Shoots 65. I think the scoring average when I looked about 2 or 3 hours ago was over 74. So it was more than three strokes over par. So he's better than 10 shots on the field, or almost 10 shots on the field, if I'm doing that math right. It was an amazing performance. And given the fact that he wasn't the front runner, but he was close enough to put himself into this position. And that's always the sort of the telltale sign. Like you can do things special for two rounds for Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And we saw it from a number of players coming into this final round. I think you did the stat last night. What was there? 12 guys within three or four strokes of the lead. So plenty of players had put themselves into that position. Nobody did what Xander Schauffele did on Sunday at Royal Troon. No one was able to put their entire game together and simply just pull away from the field. Like, look, it was tight early. And we're going to probably talk about that front nine and how the dynamic kind of changed between each player. But when you look at what he was able to do on the back nine, and I would say by what, the 13th, 14th hole, it felt like it was pretty much over.
When we talked on Saturday night for the preview podcast, and we mentioned the weather forecast, how it was going to be sunnier in bits, but the wind direction was going to be shifting. We certainly saw that. One small note when I was talking to a rules official with Xander Schauffele's group is that they predicted that at 4 o'clock local time, the wind was going to die down and that was going to make things more scoreable. That is exactly how that sort of coincided with Xander Schauffele's surge to win this championship. There was a log jam there. I think there was six players within one shot of the lead at one point about midway through the final round. And what happened over that sort of closing stretch, I would say those last seven or eight holes, Xander Schauffele made a great birdie on 11. That was basically picking up a shot and a half on the field when he trundled it out of the left rough up to just kick in range for birdie, then ripped off four birdies in a six-hole stretch. The wind almost completely laid down to the point where it was blowing maybe 10 miles an hour. It allowed him to be so much more aggressive. It made putting so much easier. And Xander Schauffele took this championship by the throat. When you look at him statistically in that final round, Rex, he did everything well. In particular, his iron play was amazing. It was sort of the bugaboo in his game, the reason why he had not quite ascended that superstar level in the final round. He gained more than five shots on the field with his approach play. Just an unbelievable performance, outlasted Justin Rose, clutched up in the moments that Justin Rose could not. I slid Justin Rose in the beginning of this podcast, J Rose tied for second along with Billy Horschel. I think it's been an amazing transformation, has it not, with Xander Schauffele and how we sort of view him as a player since the PGA Championship in May.
And I think that's the dive. You and I both came straight from the golf course back to the flat to do this podcast. So we haven't sat down and actually written our stories for the night, but that's the story I'm going to do, because the first thing you tried to do was talk to Xander's dad, Stefan, who was not at the PGA Championship. It was conspicuous that he wasn't there because he's always by Xander's side. And it was kind of part of the process of how he got to this point. It's going to be how the blueprint of building a major champion. When you consider Xander was 0 for 27 in the major championships before this year's PGA, now he's 2 for 3, which it's an amazing transformation. And you could say Valhalla was maybe a one-off, but this solidifies it. Not only is it your second major in three starts, but it was also completely different circumstances, completely different conditions, a completely different leaderboard. The way he closed it out, he didn't have to sort of respond on the final hole like he did at Valhalla. He got to take that victory lap up the 18th and really enjoy himself. But you kind of break down the blueprint of how he got here, and then we can go a little bit deeper into this. And I know you kind of did it at Valhalla, but I was taken that when I asked Stefan, how did we end up here? And he said, look, he had to give credit to Chris Como, the swing coach. And it was last fall, actually October, that Xander sat down with Chris and they started talking about maybe some things you needed to do. And when I asked Chris, he said, look, he was a great player. I didn't create a great player. All I did was give him the tools to sort of take that next step, which is now a two-time major champion. And there were some, you know, mechanical things in there. Clearly, that's what Chris Como does best. He understands the human body really, really well. And he was able to put Xander in a more comfortable position, specifically with his driver. I know you talked about his iron play, but you look at what he's able to do with his driver now, where he's just more comfortable, he's gotten more speed, he's gotten stronger, he's gotten more confident. And that's what he needed, especially over these last 2 days. Like, we're going to fixate on Sunday, but we talked last night about how difficult Saturday was. And you can almost make an argument that whoever was going to win this championship did it on Saturday. But I am fascinated by the idea that if in his heart of hearts, if you ask Xander Schauffele, how are you different now than you were 12 months ago? I'm sure it's small. It's percentages. It's not drastically better. I mean, if you look at those 27 starts in the majors before we ended up here, he had some decent finishes. He had a runner-up finish, and I mean, he had put himself into position. The difference now is percentages that have pushed him over the top.
Yeah, he was obviously a phenomenal player prior to the 2024 major season, and you're right. The changes that he has made to his game are so minute that I think it speaks to the levels that these guys are playing at. Where the margins are so small and these small differences, in particular, going to Chris Como, he has added more speed. When we broke down his performance at Valhalla for the PGA Championship, that was where it was sort of exemplified, because adding 3 to 4 miles an hour of club head speed and about 5 to 7 miles an hour of ball speed translated into him being able to carry dog legs. It translated him into being to fly bunkers and in a shootout like what happened at Valhalla for that PGA Championship, out-dueling Bryson DeChambeau with a final round 65. That was sort of on display. The byproduct of that, and I actually give Stefan Schauffele a lot of credit for realizing that he's taken his son essentially as far as he can do it, and he needed another set of eyes to sort of access that next level. That could not have been an easy decision for him to make. I give him a lot of credit. I think it's probably something that Justin Thomas and his dad, Mike, have discussed over these past couple of lean years as well. Like, do we need to evolve our coaching and our thinking and get out of this strictly father-son teaching relationship? I can only imagine how difficult that must be. And now the sense of satisfaction, the sense of pride that Stefan did do that, and now he's seen the byproduct of that with Xander Schauffele. But to your point, Rex, like, Xander has been an elite player. He had, I think, 11 top 10 finishes in the major championships prior to 2024. Now he's rattled off 4 in a row in this major season. We're going to get into sort of where that put them in the pantheon of great players right now. To me, what this back nine in particular showed is just how complete of a player Xander Schauffele is. The driving prowess that we saw, the speed, the ability to put the ball not just in play, but so far down the fairway that he's able to give himself shorter clubs into the greens and then attack. So I think about the drive on 15, which obviously on Saturday played so difficult, much easier on Sunday, but that was dead center, did not leave the center stripe of the fairway, hit it 330 yards. I think about the approach play and the shot that he hit into 14, which I think was the pivotal moment, making a birdie on a very difficult hold there as well. I think about the pitch shots and the touch that he has around the green, the difficult into the fescue, it's not technically green, into the fescue shot for his third shot over the pop bunker on 16, which set up a birdie on the par five, and then the putting, which has always been a strength for him, but the putts that he made on 13 and 14 to break out of that pack with Justin Rose to leave Tristan Lawrence, not Thurston, Tristan Lawrence behind it as well, I think was just a demonstration of how complete of a player Xander Schauffele has become. The scores were the same between what Xander Schauffele shot, the 65 at Valhalla and the 65 now at Troon, but the performances were wildly different and sort of showed the moxie and the makeup of a great player.
Two things. One, are you laying in bed?
I might as well be. This is a dangerous position. This is not where I will write. So on Sunday night for NBCSports.com/golf, I will be writing a Justin Rose tribute, the 43-year-old who gave it his all in the mix at a major championship for the first time in a long time. I will not be in this prone position because I am liable to nod off at any moment. But yes, I am in the bedroom flat.
And the other conversation I had with Xander Schauffele's dad, Stefan, is what would you drink out of the claret jug? If you could do it one time and you got to choose the liquid of your choice or the beverage of your choice, what would it be?
Probably, I think I would probably do bourbon. I'm a huge Angel's Envy fan, if anyone is familiar with that particular brand of bourbon. A big Four Roses single barrel guy as well. That would be tough to sort of chug or swill out of the claret jug. In the absence of that, I would probably just go with a strictly lager as well.
Ever since Shane Lowry won at Port Rush a few years ago, and it was such a special moment and such a great party, I want a Guinness. I want a Guinness in Ireland. Like, they're different, and I know anyone will tell you that, but I want to drink a Guinness out of the claret jug in Ireland. I think that would be the height of sort of my golfing career if I could get there. To your point about Xander, and I think you made a really good point about him having all the shots, and I think it kind of gets overlooked a little bit. And actually, Chris Como was really, really quick to point out how good of a clutch putter he is. I mean, he almost compared him to Tiger Woods in his prime. When you look at, he doesn't make every putt, but it seems like he makes the putts that are most important. We certainly saw that on display today, and how it maybe gets overlooked a lot. And I'll also give the idea out there that I love the fact that someone who was motivated by the idea that we reminded him every single time he showed up at a major that, well you haven't won a major. How do you feel about that? How do you like your chances here? That clearly, in retrospect, after the things he said at Valhalla, motivated him. And it would have been easy probably for him to get that first major championship and maybe sail a little bit, to maybe feel like, well, I've reached the top of the mountain, I can take a breath. The idea that he turned it around so quickly and did it, as I pointed out, in vastly different conditions, that's impressive.
It certainly is impressive. I think he has always preached process. He has always preached patience, and that has certainly borne out over this 2024 major season. I also think it's worth commending Xander, not just for the quality of his shots and his sort of shot-making ability, the completeness of his game. I think on-course comportment, his demeanor is tailor-made for major championship golf as well. I think that's the reason why his record in the majors was as good as it was, even though he did not have a victory. He's very even-keeled. He's very level-headed. He doesn't get too high or too low. I think that speaks for his game inside the ropes, as well as how he has handled sort of the major success as well. He said, if anything, it just makes him hungrier for more to chasing major championships in the future. I was struck, Rex, by Xander Schauffele. This is the question I wanted to ask, and I was not called on by the RNA moderator. But if you remember back at Valhalla, Xander Schauffele made the point that he was making an analogy that Scottie Scheffler is at the top of the mountain, and with one major championship, he's essentially just put his stake in it, and he's busy climbing up Scottie's mountain. And yet here we sit in late July with Xander Schauffele, the one with two major championships, and Scottie, who is having this incredible season, the first player since Arnold Palmer in 1962 to win six times before July 1st, who has walked away with two majors to Scottie's one. Who is the best major performer in 2024? Was it Xander? Was it Scottie? And how does that sort of alter or shade the way that you think about the respective seasons in 2024?
I actually, full disclosure here, I wanted to write a Scottie Scheffler column tonight, because the idea being that he had probably one of the most unique, interesting, I don't know, whatever word you want to use, seasons in the major championships in recent memory. I mean, this goes probably all the way back to some year that Tiger Woods was probably going for the Tiger Slam. When you consider that he wins the Masters, that's clearly the highlight of that season. And then whatever happens on that Friday morning at Valhalla with Detective Brian Gillis, and we all know the story and how that played out from there. And then I think I made this argument last night that I think that really carried over to the U.S. Open. I mean, there was a level of not being prepared, that his words, not mine, that he wasn't ready for that unique test that was the number two course. And then this week, where he put himself into contention, you do all the things you want to do as the world's best player at the moment, but I never felt like he was in his stride at all. He never looked like he was actually playing good golf, but he posted scores and he gave himself opportunities, but everyone's going to point to what happened at number nine. And when he four putted from just off the green, it was a three putt from 6.5 feet as, oh, well, that's where his everything ended for him. I kept waiting for him to have that good putting round. I think I said this last night, he just never had it. And so to your point, and this was sort of the sports radio conversation we had earlier today with our colleague, Doug Ferguson from the AP, and he wanted nothing to do with this conversation, but it will be interesting when it comes time for players to vote on the PGA Tour Player of the Year, because Scotty should get it. He wins a major, the Masters. He wins the Players Championship. He's got four other titles to go along with that. I believe all four of them are signature events, if I'm remembering correctly. And so clearly Scotty has had a better season, but if you go back in time, and that Player of the Year is kind of based on performances in major championships. And if you're just voting for the Grand Slam Player of the Year, that clearly goes to Xander.
Oh, the major performer of the year, yes, clearly goes to Xander, top eight or better in all four major championships this year, while Scotty, after a final round 72, won over on Sunday, drifted back to, I think, T7 this week at Troon. And obviously, he was out to the top 40 at Pinehurst for the U.S. Open to go along with a top 10 finish at the PGA Championship and, of course, his victory at the Masters. I do think it is an interesting discussion. We do not have to vote this Sunday on July 21st. There is still significant golf to be played this calendar year that I do think could influence some voters. Although it's not a PGA Tour event, both players, Xander Schauffele, the gold medals from Tokyo, and Scottie Scheffler will be vying for a gold medal this time in 2 weeks' time in Paris. I think that's very important to PGA Tour players, even though it's not strictly a PGA Tour event. I also think, Rex, the FedEx Cup playoffs could now have renewed interest among PGA Tour players who are trying to decide who was the best player. Scotty leads in, I think, all the important categories: top 10, scoring average, obviously victories with six. I think a lot of players appreciate the consistent excellence that he has shown. But it's not like Xander has been a slouch either. You look at, he came within a shot of at least forcing a playoff at the Players Championship, nearly won a couple of signature events as well. Again, top eight or better in all four major championships. If he can nip Scotty head to head in the Olympics, potentially get on the podium there, as well as a deep run in the FedEx Cup playoffs. Keep in mind, he has a terrific record at Eastlake twice in this FedEx Cup era. He has been the lowest score over 72 holes, if not walking away with the FedEx Cup trophy, while Scottie Scheffler at times has struggled at Eastlake for the Tour Championship finale. I do think that vote can still be decided over these, I would call them, four remaining big tournaments, whereas, boy, a month or two ago, it would have seemed unfathomable that this was even an open race.
No, and it will be an interesting vote. You're right, because they're going to look at Scotty's consistency over the course of the season, and I think that probably should get the nod. But I always go back to the year that Tiger Woods won the U.S. Open at Torrey Pines, and then, of course, he's hurt. We all know what happened after that. He didn't play again the rest of the year. And if you remember correctly, Padraig Harrington actually won two majors that year. And I remember Tiger being asked sometime later that fall, who did you vote for? And he made it clear he voted for Padraig Harrington. And the answer, when we asked him why, and it's like 2-1. It's as simple as that. In Tiger's mind, which I'm not sure this should be the litmus test, but the way his mind works was, this is kind of based on your entirely on your performance in the major championships. And again, that would lean towards Xander, but I think you're right. I think, number one, there's some important golf still to be played, and guys are probably going to pay attention to that. And even if Xander were to win a gold medal and make a deep run in the playoffs, I'm still not sure that the membership is going to vote for him simply because of what Scotty did earlier in the year.
Rex, what do you think about Royal Troon as a championship golf course for this Open Championship? I believe this is your third Open that you've covered at Troon. We didn't quite have the duel that we had between Phil Mickelson and Henrik Stenson back in 2016, but I do think that Troon showed why it belongs among the very top tier of courses on the Open Rota. How would you sort of rate the week in its totality from a golf course perspective? Did it give you everything that you wanted to see? Did the golf course ask questions that you wanted to be answered in the year's final major?
Just to prove the point that we listen to the comments that the readers make underneath on the YouTube page, I agree with most of the comments that were posted on there yesterday, that the players who were complaining on Saturday about the conditions just need to suck it up. That's kind of what makes the Open Championship so special as compared to the other major championships and the other golf tournaments that we play over the course of the year. I love the conditions. I mean, I had absolutely no problem with the way the RNA set the golf course up on Saturday. I had no problem with the way the draw went. I mean, clearly there was a good side and a bad side of the draw, but there almost always is when you're playing, when you have 14 hours of tee times, that's bound to happen. The course itself, and I think I've mentioned this before, I probably have played this one personally more than any of the other courses in the rotation. I got to be friends with a member a few years ago. And before I played it, I probably did not have a very high opinion of it. Until I actually played it, I didn't have an appreciation for sort of how much of a good design it is, how much fun it is to play. Certainly, it didn't look like fun on Saturday. I understand what people were going to say. But you play the postage stamp, and it's just a brilliant hole. It played 100 yards today, and it still played over par. That's a phenomenal stat in the modern game when you have the best players in the world with a wedge in their hand. And there wasn't a whole lot of wind in the afternoon, as you pointed out. So I would say, behind only Muirfield, I think it's probably the best course in the rotation, or the second best course behind Muirfield. As far as it played this week, I mean, I don't know that there were moments on Sunday when you and I were probably breaking into hives because there were stories on that leaderboard that, let's be honest, we didn't want to write. We probably didn't want to talk about, simply because when I'm not very educated when it comes to Daniel Brown. I know a little bit about him after this week, but when it comes to taking a deep dive on a player that was playing his first major championship, that would have been tough for both of us. Let's admit that. We didn't even know how to pronounce T-Law's name. Tristan, thank you very much for the person who told us how to pronounce his name. Tristan Lawrence. We didn't even know how to say his name. So those would have been difficult, and you and I both had nervous moments throughout the course of the day. But after 72 holes, I think we ended up with a really, really good champion.
I liked Royal Troon a lot better than I thought that I did. I didn't remember much besides, obviously, the duel between Stenson and Phil back in 2016 about the golf course. I was struck by how everyone talks about this golf course, where on the front nine, it's down and off the right, and on the back nine, it's into and off the left, and how the disparity and the split is so dramatic on this golf course. And we really did not see that play out over these 72 holes. Saturday, I kind of chalk up to sort of a weird one. The RNA officials, I think, were probably caught a little bit off guard by just how windy, just how cold, just how wet it got. Yes, they predicted rain. They did not necessarily predict the intensity of the wind as well as the direction of the wind. I saw a lot of people sort of criticizing Shane Lowry, who mentioned that he thought the RNA should have moved up the tees on 15 in particular, where he had to hit driver off the deck, and 17 where he also had to hit driver on a par three. Had the RNA done that, And had the conditions been as calm as they were and as benign as they were in the morning, Justin Thomas would have had, you know, flip wedges into 15, and he would have been hitting as little as 7-iron into 17. There's no way that you can account for 8 or 9 hours of tee times when the weather in Scotland can be so unpredictable and so variable. I had no issue with that whatsoever. To me, it is a great test of golf over the entire 18 holes. You have the shortest hole on the open rota, the postage stamp. You also have the longest hole on the par five at number six at 625 yards. I think it tested everyone. You had to put the ball in the fairway because there was ample trouble with all those pedal pop bunkers. I thought iron play, as evident by Xander Schauffele 65 in the final round, that was certainly something that was emphasized. And the greens, although they're not as they don't have as many features as a traditional course that you'd see on the PGA Tour, even obviously certainly Pinehurst, the host for the US Open. Like, there were still some dramatic movements that you could have. They were good speed. There was no issues with that whatsoever. I just love Lynx golf. I love the way it tests players. I love the shots that it requires. I love the discipline and the mental patience and strength and fortitude that it asks of these players. I think the PGA Tour can become so monotonous because it's essentially just a bomb and gouge game, and it's just a birdie fest week in and week out. Whoever gets hot with the putter, coupled with length and precision with approach play, is the one who's going to win here. This one is all about shot making. It's all about patience. I'd love to see that tested more throughout the year. And to me, the best answer, Rex, is to have a US Open and then essentially have a month or month and a half of Lynx golf season, where you have sort of these national opens, the Irish Open, the Scottish Open, maybe have the Spanish Open, the French Open, however you want to do it, get more links golf in the PGA Tour schedule, or incorporate some of these obviously marquee events in the DP World Tour into the PGA Tour schedule. And I think you would have a more compelling product. And I think you'd have a more diverse set of winners because the golf courses demand different questions to be answered.
We did that a couple of years ago when Irish Scottish Open Championship, I covered all three of those events, and Irish wasn't a links course that year, but they could certainly find plenty of really good links courses in Ireland. I like that idea. I don't know if you could do it for a month and a half. I want to pivot here real quick just to go to back to you. Cause when you start typing tonight, you're going to talk about Justin Rose. And the idea being that at 43, I think you said, he sort of found a little bit of magic that hadn't been there. He had to qualify for this event. Like, it would have been a very special story after the career he's had. What angle are you taking?
Yeah, basically that he's trying to buck up against the trend and this undercurrent that is undeniable, and it is so strong. The world of golf, and you look at Scottie Scheffler and Xander Schauffele, certainly fall in this category. Like, the world of golf is defined by players who are between the ages of 26 and 32. Rory McIlroy has done an unbelievable job at age 35, having the longevity and the consistent excellence that he has had over these past 15 years. Justin Rose is now just a month or two away from turning 44 years of age, where I don't think anyone would have blamed him if he'd just taken the bag and gone to live, sort of coasted. And if he didn't play any major championships, no one would have necessarily missed him. And yet he has sort of doubled down on his career, got into the Ryder Cup last year. It was such a key part of that European victory in Rome. You look at him hiring Mark Blackburn to sort of take his game to another level after so many years with Sean Fuller. You look at him reuniting with Mark Fulcher-Fuch, who was such an integral part of his sort of mid-career and elevating to the heights he did, winning a U.S. Open, winning a FedEx Cup, becoming the number one player in the world, becoming one of the best European players of his generation. Him sort of fighting back against what is such an obvious undercurrent and such a strong undercurrent, I think is pretty inspiring. It's pretty encouraging. This to Rosie was sort of validation of the work that he's been doing, and he doesn't really see any reason why he can't continue to be a consistent force into his 40s, just like Phil Mickelson was, just like Steve Stricker was, just like Vijay Singh was, all of those players before him. I think this performance was validation in the past month, where he said, you know, he still has plenty of good golf left. I think his performance at Royal Troon, tying for second with Billy Horschel, was certainly an indication of that.
It was fun to watch, and I've only kind of seen that emotion out of Rosie at a Ryder Cup. I mean, I don't know how many fist pumps I saw from him over the course of the last 2 days, but he was clearly excited. He was clearly in the moment. Yeah, I don't know how he does that without hurting himself. Lord knows. Please don't do it, because you've already got elbow issues. I feel like I'm going to warn you against it. I'm going to caution you. Yep, be careful. I don't know at what point something turned this week. There was a switch that went off, and clearly this championship means the world to him. He's from England. He pretty much started his career here. I mean, we all know what this means to him, but you're right. At this stage in his career, we see other members of sort of that generation. And I know Henrik Stenson is a little bit older, and Sergio Garcia is right around that number. You're right. They all took the bag. They all moved on. And it seemed like they kind of were fine being done with their place in the game. They were ready to cede their spot in the game to someone else, someone younger, someone better than they were at the time. Justin Rose is not. He's determined. And it is interesting. You talk about him turning to Mark Blackburn. He had so much success over the years with Sean Foley, and they had such a close relationship that, yeah, I think that took a lot for him to step away from that relationship and try to find something new. It reminds me a little bit of the story that I'm going to tell about Xander tonight. I can only imagine how difficult that conversation was between Xander and his father when he told him, look, I've got to find something else. I've got to take the next step, and I don't feel like we're getting there. It seems to me that Rosie took a very, very similar track. I guess the one thing I'll point back is, after Xander, and there's always emotion when it comes to winning a major championship, but I was taken with the emotion of both Justin Rose in his press conference afterwards and Billy Horschel, who kind of was open on Saturday afternoon talking about, I have dreamt about this my entire career. I'm not going to hide from this. I've envisioned myself standing there holding the claret jug, and I don't try to pretend like that doesn't happen. And if it doesn't happen on Sunday, and it didn't, I'm going to be fine with that. I'm comfortable with my career. But the emotions afterwards, when he finished up his round on Sunday, also spoke volumes. that to come so close and to come short. I feel like when it comes to losing, there's a lot more feelings to process than there are when you win.
Yeah, I think that certainly, I think that's certainly true. And I think Billy Horschel, the first time in his career that he was even in this position, although he was not a factor over the past hour and a half, like he has to feel, I think he has to take away nothing but positives that with the 54 hole lead, he shot a 68 and essentially got passed up by a better player on Sunday. Again, Xander Schauffele saying this was at the tippy top of rounds he's ever played in his entire career. It's not like Billy Horschel necessarily lost it. Shooting 68 in the final round of a major championship. I think if you told him that on Saturday night, he would have taken it. Same with Rosie, shooting 67. There's so much that he could possibly build on to move in the future, even though we're now 9 months away from another major championship. Rex, as we put a bow on this 152nd Open at Royal Troon, what will you remember most outside of a Xander Schauffele victory? A victory, again, that I think can resonate and people can point back to, especially when you look at the way that he closed out Valhalla. Completely different scenario. Needed some late birdies, needed the toilet bowl lip in on the 72nd hole to nip Bryson by a shot. This one, he actually got to enjoy the walk, sort of the culmination of the completeness of his game. And again, one of the best rounds he's ever played. Outside of Xander, how we remember this week at Troon.
The conditions, and it's kind of what makes this event special. We talked about it earlier, but Thursday was really, really hard for those who teed off early. And Rory McIlroy was in that group. And we kind of talked about how uneven the split was. And look, dude, there's good sides of the draw when it comes to the Open, and there's bad sides. And that sort of followed the script, and how things got a little bit better on Friday, and then how everything unraveled on Saturday. And when you get around like Saturday, where you just describe guys hitting driver on a par four, or Xander Schauffele talking about healing a 3-wood on the par 3 17th that came up 15 paces short of the green. That was a 230-yard drive for him. That just doesn't happen in professional golf. This is the only place that really happens. You don't end up at the Memorial talking about guys hitting 8-irons 280 yards downwind and hitting drivers 240 yards into the wind. I just think the uniqueness of this is what makes this so special.
For me, I think I will certainly remember Saturday and how hellacious it got over those past, over those last 2 or 3 hours. I'll also remember Roy McIlroy's faceplant, shooting 11 over par over the first 2 rounds. No one could have seen that coming just 1 month after he came so close to adding that fifth and long-awaited major title. I think if Rory had his druthers, if he had his way, if he didn't have to play the Olympics, if he didn't have to play the FedEx Cup playoffs, if he didn't have to play sort of the season-ending playoff format for the DP World Tour as well, I think he would love a lengthy sabbatical here. The ability to take 2, 3, 4 months off to process what actually happened at Pinehurst, to sort of come up with a game plan for 2025, because as much as he can say that he's never been closer to winning a major championship, and at times it certainly feels like that, he has to step back and look at the golf that now exists in the completeness of his game between him and Scottie Scheffler, as well as Xander Schauffele, who in 3 short months has completely reinvented himself and sort of his career narrative, picking up 2 major championships in quick succession like he has. I'm sure of it that Roy would love an extended break here, but I'm very curious to see what he can manage over these next 4 to 6 weeks, salvage this year, and if any changes will be made to Rory's game in 2025. Because again, he's 35 years old. He's in incredible shape. He's still, he's probably going to drop the number 3 in the world right now. There's so much to like about Rory, particularly after coming so close to major championship. But I think with some deeper self-reflection, I think he has to think, Rex, that it only feels like it's getting further.
No, I think you're off on that one. Because I think that's kind of the beauty of professional golf. And I'm not speaking specific to Rory here, but the beauty of professional golf is, okay, I struggled today. And I think Billy Horschel touched on this. He's playing the 3M next week. And someone asked him, are you still going to play the 3M? He said, yep, I'll be on the range at 7 a.m. getting ready, working on the range, working on my swing. I think that's sort of the beauty of this as compared to other sports, is that, yes, it's going to take you a minute to process, Pinehurst being the primary example here, the pain of that, of being so close and letting it slip through your fingers. But he was able to get right back on the horse. And I think we talked about this on Friday when Rory missed the cut. I think whatever happened this week at Royal Troon for him had less to do with Pinehurst in those last 4 holes than it did. He just got caught on the wrong side of the draw. And he's been really open about the idea that his game is not designed.
He didn't get caught on the right side of the draw. Yeah. He didn't get caught on the wrong side of the draw. He didn't have his best game. He said there were strategic elements.
Maybe
he was unprepared for. He didn't putt well enough in the wind. If you look at the major season that he had, Rex, he was not a factor at the Masters, the most important tournament that he plays all year long. He really was on the outskirts of contention all week at the PGA Championship at Valhalla as well. And then you look at the Open Championship, shooting his worst score in a major since Port Rush 5 years ago. Like if you look at it in its totality, especially compared to now the two players of the moment, who are very clearly Scottie Scheffler and Xander Schauffele. I think if he's doing serious self-reflection, which Roy McIlroy should do during the offseason, I think he will see that there are changes that need to be made to his game to be a more consistent threat like Scottie, like Xander, because he's going to have to contend with them for the next half decade.
Hokum. That's everything to do with it, just his inability to play in these conditions. He said it. He has said it before. He talked about it at Augusta when he got caught in the wind and the swing didn't hold up. He talked about it a few years ago in Dubai when he was playing well. He was number one in the world and got caught in some weird winds and just shot a million. He talked about it at Royal St. George's. I believe it was the last time the Open Championship was there. He got caught on the bad side of the draw there and said that maybe my game's not suited for this. Look, it's suited for every other event 51 weeks out of the year. And it's suited for an Open Championship if you play it at Royal Liverpool and you don't get extreme conditions like we got this week. And sometimes that's what you end up with at the game's oldest championship. But when you get what you got this week and you have to find a way to bunt it around. I love Xander's comment about why do you play so well on Lynx Golf? And he said, look, I don't hit the prettiest drives. I don't have the best looking golf swing, but I'm really good at getting the ball moving in the right direction and keeping it in front of me. And that's all he had to do this week. Rory is not built that way. He wants to hit big, high, towering draws that travel 340 yards. And then he wants to do the same thing with a wedge and repeat over and over again. Sometimes that's not a really good recipe on a links course. I don't think it was anything more than that.
I can't help but think, I know you did not watch Full Swing on Netflix, but there was sort of a stolen moment where Rory was in the locker room at Oak Hill, immediately following the 2023 PGA Championship, won, of course, by Brooks Koepka. And Rory was there with Sean O'Flaherty, his manager, as well as Harry Diamond, his caddy. And Rory was saying, in those moments, I wonder if I need a full-scale breakdown, if I need to tear it up and try and build it all over again, because I'm not good enough to compete against these guys right now. I wonder if there will be any sort of similar self-reflection, if he will either resist the urge to go down that full-scale breakdown, or if he actually will make some changes heading into 2025. Because again, from a consistency standpoint, especially in the game's biggest events, in the events that are most clearly going to define Rory's legacy, it is another year in which he has fallen short. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. We appreciate you guys listening to each and every one of the mini podcasts we had from Royal Troon. It was great to bring those to you. It seemed like you guys greatly enjoyed them. We'll not have another mini pod edition until the President's Cup in September, assuming, of course, we get 4 days of competition there and that the U.S. does not blow them out by Saturday night. So we will be far removed from that. You are going on vacation with not bunkmate, but your wife, for the next week before you cover the Paris Olympics for both the men's and women's competition. That means we will have a guest host on Wednesday. The one and only T. Lou Golf Channel insider Todd Lewis will be joining me for a full recap and breakdown of the 2024 majors, as well as handing out some report cards for the game's top stars. All right. In the meantime, you guys are the drill. NBCSports.com/golf for all the latest news, notes, and updates. Rex has a story on Xander. I will have a column on Justin Rose. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. We'll talk to you guys Wednesday night.